All of them. Twam.
You.
Asam pratikshante. Are awaiting. Smarantaha. Remembering. Vaishasam. Injuries. Tava. Of you. Samparetam. After your death. Ayaha. Made of iron. Kuttahai. By the horns. Chindante. Pierce. Utita. Enlivened. Manyavaha. Anger. Translation: all these animals are awaiting your death so that they can avenge the injuries you've inflicted upon them. After you die, they will angrily pierce your body with iron horns. You can repeat. All these animals are awaiting your death so that they can avenge the injuries you've inflicted upon them. After you die, they will angrily pierce your body with iron horns. Shoot. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, He died. Anarada Muni wanted to draw King Prachinibari Shat's attention to the excesses of killing animals and sacrifices. It is said in the Shastras that by killing animals in a sacrifice, one immediately promotes them to human birth. Similarly, by killing their enemies on a battlefield, the Kshatriyas who fight for a right cause are elevated to the heavenly planets after death. In the Manu Sangita, it is stated that it is necessary for a king to execute a murderer so that the murderer will not suffer for his criminal actions in his next life. On the basis of such understanding, Narada Muni warns the king that the animals killed in sacrifices by the king await him at his death in order to avenge themselves. Narada Muni is not contradicting himself here. Narada Muni wanted to convince the king that overindulgence in animal sacrifice is risky because as soon as there is a small discrepancy in the execution of such a sacrifice, the slaughtered animal may not be promoted to a human form of life. Consequently, the person performing sacrifice will be responsible for the death of the animal, just as much as a murderer is responsible for killing another man. When animals are killed in a slaughterhouse, six people connected with the killing are responsible for the murder. The person who gives permission for the killing, the person who kills, the person who helps, the person who purchases the meat, the person who cooks the flesh, and the person who eats it all become entangled in the killing. Narada Muni wanted to draw the king's attention to this fact. Thus, animal killing is not encouraged, even in a sacrifice. So, ete tvam sampatikshante smaranto vaishasantava sampare tamaiha kutais chindanti utita. Chindantyutita manyavaha. Saumagana timidanda shagranjana shlakaya chakshur viditam yenitsis mai shigurve namaha. So, it's interesting here that Narada Muni is preaching not on the basis of being empathic or compassionate. You know, some of us preach on that basis. You know, we should be empathic. Animals have souls. We have feelings. Animals have feelings. Sometimes we're preaching to people, and they say, generally, people who are of different religious persuasions say that animals don't have souls, isn't it? And then I just reply to them that, well, if they don't have a soul, why do you keep a cat or a dog? Why not just keep a vacuum cleaner or a computer? And actually, nowadays, people have computer pets, too. In Japan, there's many different computer pets coming. Do you know this? Computer dogs they have, and computer companions, and even computer people, not people, computers to serve you food, and even in the hospitals, I was just reading, because people are becoming heavier and heavier, and now they have computer nurses. to lift the bodies. And they've come to the point where they can lift a 200-pound body in the hospital. The computer. So they go down and lift you, put you in there. And they're very sensitive, too. So the point is, the computers, in spite of all the advancement in what they call artificial intelligence, and there's been a lot of advancement in artificial intelligence, so computers can basically mimic human responses. You know, they can somehow or other sense the tone of your voice and your mood or your emotions. You know, they have this whole thing like facial recognition. You heard of this before? They can look at the faces, which muscles are contracted, which muscles are not, tell you whether you're smiling, whether you're depressed. And they can emulate human responses. But they actually have no feelings. So very few people kiss their computer, cuddle up with their computer at night. I do with my iPad. But anyway, so very few people do this. Because you can't experience loving exchanges with a computer. So I point this out to people, and they said, well, animals have souls, animals have feelings. And why are you killing this poor cow in order to eat? Of course, sometimes they say, I'm not killing it, I just go to Walmart, the superstore. Or I just go to Food Lion or whatever. And I said, well, it's the same thing. You're paying for it to be killed in the same way that if someone's murdering someone, they either pay or they take out a contract for someone to be murdered, and they're just as much responsible. And they say, well, I can't give it up. It ultimately comes to that point. So simply preaching to people on the basis of compassion oftentimes, or most often, doesn't work. That's what I've seen. So sometimes you have to scare the bejesus out of them. Excuse that expression. And I don't know where it came from, but it's probably not a nice expression. So sometimes you really, just like the Christians, they come and they say, you're going to hell, you know, unless you take up what we're doing. And that's sort of like scare techniques or fear techniques. But like a robber comes to you and he says, give me your money or else I'm going to shoot you. And of course, you give him your money. But if he just goes to you on compassion, on the basis of compassion, says, my wife is suffering, you know, my kids need food, I haven't paid the rent this month, can I have some money? You're going to say, bug off. Just like sometimes we're driving in India, and people are coming, knocking on the window, you know, wanting money like that. And we just look the other way, right? Because we don't have so much compassion. You just say, you know, wish the light would turn red or green. There's that red in India because that means you can go. So, nobody got that joke. So I wish the light would turn red so we could go. So this person won't bug us. But if the person took out a gun and pointed at us, you know, even through the window, because the windows aren't bulletproof, we would certainly be very much inclined to give him some money. At least something, you know, just to get out of the way. So in the same way, we find that Narada Muni is using this particular preaching technique with King Prachitibharishad. The King Prachitibharishad is not ready to hear about, you know, you should be compassionate, you should be loving, these living entities have feelings just like you and I, because he wasn't on that platform. The same way Mugrari was not on that platform either. So therefore, Narada Muni had to show Mugrari a virtual future. That is, what's going to happen to you if you continue going down the same path? That these animals will actually attack you. So it's a very similar similar story to what's happening right here. So that's the point, that unless you change your ways, you're going to suffer. So it's interesting also that in presenting Krishna consciousness, the first point in the Nectar of Devotion given by Rishi Rupa Goswami Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, as that devotional service gives you immediately relief from all suffering, right? It's interesting because it's a preaching point that, you know, if the first point is everything becomes auspicious or it's the only means to attract Krishna, so, you know, so what? Because we're not on that platform. You know, if I say to people, you take up Krishna consciousness, and it's rarely achieved. So what? Many things are rarely achieved, too. You like Mercedes and things like that. You know, a lot of things are rarely achieved. So if you present these other points, of course, happiness is also a little attractive. But if you present these other points, it's not so relevant to the person's situation, right? Because in this material world, everyone is suffering. And, of course, the first analysis given in the Nectar of Devotion after the introduction and the definition of what pure devotional service is what is causing the suffering. In other words, not only the pure devotional service will relieve you from suffering, but it describes why are you suffering and why does pure devotional service relieve you from suffering. So the analysis goes as follows, that suffering in this material world is caused by three things, and that applies to all of us too, even though we happen to think we're devotees. So suffering is caused, first of all, by avidya. You know, what is avidya? Avidya is the opposite of vidya. Avidya means ignorance. That's interesting. Because ignorance is also a negative word, meaning to ignore something. You understand? Ignorance. Or Krishna Bhatia Mukha, turning your face away from Krishna. So vidya means knowledge, and avidya means without knowledge or negation of knowledge. So, anyway. So, ignorance, it's interesting. Ignorance is one of the causes of suffering. Why is that? Because if you identify with the body will undergo all sorts of interesting dynamics and permutations like that, especially as you get older. And even when you're young, I mean, you're in the womb. And there's a lot of suffering there. There's a lot of suffering as a baby. I mean, there's suffering, if you look at it, then it's not just when you get older and the body gets a little creaky. That just from the beginning, in the womb, and then you're a baby, you want things, and the parents don't know what you want, and you're crying. Like I was in an airplane, there were babies crying in the airplane. Probably because their ears, you know, the pressure on the ears and everything like that. And the people sitting in front of them were just like cursing the whole time. Why did I get this seat? I always get the seat in front of these babies. They were feeling very hateful, not at all compassionate. So the baby like that. And then when you get older, you have all these different desires develop, especially when you hit puberty. You know, all these different desires develop, and then you get older, and then you somehow or other you try to fulfill your desires by getting married, and then there's more trouble because then you have so many bills to pay and so many headaches. Anyway, so you get the idea. So ignorance is actually one of the causes of suffering in this world, the misidentification of the body. Another cause is papam. Papam means sins. And sometimes sinful desires and sins are a cause. Actually, yeah, sinful reactions. Sinful reactions to sinful activities, papam. So right here what's being described is the aparabdha karma and the parabdha karma. You understand that this King Prachini Bharichat is going to have to suffer from. Aparabdha means that which is not yet manifest, and that's actually mentioned here. All these animals are awaiting your death so they can avenge the injuries you have inflicted upon them. No, that's aparabdha. It's not yet manifest. But then, after you die, here's the parabdha. They will angrily pierce your body with iron horns. You understand? So both these things are mentioned in this verse. Aparabdha and parabdha. Aparabdha means that reaction which is not yet manifest. And parabdha means that reaction which is manifest. In other words, aparabdha means it's coming, just now coming. And prarabdha means it's already here. And if you want to see what your prarabdha karma is like, look in the mirror. You look in the mirror, look at your body, look at all the diseases, look at the legal problems you have, look at the social problems you have, look at the emotional problems you have, look at the psychological problems you have, and that's all your prarabdha karma. Of course, there's some good karma, too, a little bit. A little bit of good prarabdha karma. That means how much money you have, not very much, how many friends you have, the few times you get to enjoy by going to the beach. You know, in the summer we go to the coast and we enjoy like that. Not me. The rest of you go. So that's another cause of suffering. And the final cause of suffering is something that's very interesting. It's called bijam. Bijam means the desire. Because your desires are there and they're really burning you. Abhritam gyaname tena ganino nichavayana kamarupena kontya dusparena lenacha. They're never satisfied, so it's just like burning you all these intense desires to have things, to do things, and everything you see in this world sort of stimulates a desire. Whether you see a beautiful person, or you see a beautiful car. It's like, where was I? Oh, I was in India. Someone had a Mercedes and a BMW there, living in the same place where I was staying. And the desires would just welled up in my heart to have those same things. I said, why do I have to drive around in a, whatever it is, you know, Ambassador in India? But not quite, it was a, anyway, it's a different type of car, but When people have that, I want it. Or, I want the newest iPad or the newest whatever it is. So these desires are just burning our hearts. So anyway, so these are the three sources of misery. You have to be convinced. If you really want to make progress in Krishna consciousness, you have to be convinced that these three things cause you misery. If you're not convinced, then at least chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam, and eventually you will become convinced after you get smashed around a lot. Do you understand? There are three things. There's a desire. Desire is the sinful activities and their reaction. And the ignorance. Three different things. And it's interesting, these three things are also connected. How do I mean they're connected? As a vicious cycle. They actually produce each other, which is interesting. For example, let's say you have a desire. Or even before that, there comes something called akutam. Akutam means an inclination. That's not quite a desire. It's like before I want that Mercedes, I have an inclination to enjoy in this world. It's a basically the inclination to enjoy. So there's the, what happens at first is there's the kutam, which is the inclination, the bijam, which is the seed of desire, which is not yet fructified. And then after that, you have the papam, they follow one after the other. And then from the papam, you got the aparabdha karma. As soon as you commit the sinful activity, you got the aparabdha karma, that means unmanifest. And the upper up the karma, actually the root of the whole thing is avidya, sorry. It starts with avidya. Let me backtrack a little bit. From ignorance, then you get kutam, the tendency to enjoy. Because if you're not ignorant, you won't have the tendency to enjoy. That's a kutam, so that's avidya, kutam, then bijam, and after the bijam, the papam, and after the papam, the aparabdha karma, that's not yet manifest karma, and from the aparabdha karma you get two different things. You get more bijams, and then at the same time you get prarabdha karma. And so from the more bijams, and then you continue that whole cycle. from the more bijams you get papam, and then from the more papams you get aparabdha karma. You understand? It's like a whole cycle that goes around. So the question is how to break this cycle. You know, so usually the cycle is broken through knowledge, transcendental knowledge. Because with transcendental knowledge, you can understand where the kutam and the bijam come from and able to cut it off at the source. So where, it's interesting, it's actually interesting. Where does the bijam or the seed of desire come from? And it comes from various different places. This is also mentioned in the Madhurya Kadambari. It can come, that bijam and kutam, can come from bad association. Like Prabhupada said, if you eat food cooked by someone who is not part of the Hare Krishna movement, the mind can become wicked. It's interesting. It's a fact. It's a subtle law of material nature. I mean, you may not accept that. You may think I can eat any damn thing as long as it doesn't crawl or have legs to it. But even the scientists have ascertained that consciousness influences the shape of matter. Like this Japanese scientist who was able to take microphotographs, of the crystalline structure of water when it was frozen. And the crystalline structure of water changed according to the mentality of the person who would hold or touch the vessel in which the crystalline, which the water was held. Like if the person holding the vessel was thinking love and singing the Beatles song, All You Need Is Love, then the crystalline structure was very beautiful. And if the person was thinking, hey, infidels, karmis, demons, then the crystalline structure was very ugly. One thing that's interesting, just like a side note, of people or people who are hateful, they're actually very black and white. That means there's no shades of gray. You see that a little bit in American politics nowadays. It's become a little bit more black and white. It's either, you know, the Tea Party and things like that. It's just like, you're either one of us or you're a demon, basically. And we tend to think like that, too. We tend to just, like, see someone either, you know, good or bad. And we don't understand that people are basically shades of gray. So it's an important point. So anyway, getting back to the point of association. So that's why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, what a satsanga chage Vaishnava char. When he was asked about the quality of a Vaishnava, he says, first quality is a Vaishnava gives up bad association, and what? Sadhu Sangha takes up good association. So that's really how you apply your intelligence if you want to get out of this whole cycle of papa and bijam and kutam and all those other nice things and aparabdha and prarabdha. To break the cycle, you have to break that bad association. Because otherwise, with bad association, you're going to keep having that bad kutam and bijams. Because that's really karnam guna sangasya, sadasa janma jonishu. That's modes of nature. And we're not cautious enough with that. And so far as our eating, and so far as our hit listening to music or whatever, we're not cautious enough. I mean, I noticed just, you know, being on the plane, and sometimes, you know, you watch a movie or something like that, you can't avoid it. Well, you can, but I'm just making an excuse. But sometimes you watch a movie, and then your whole consciousness changes. It just changes, you know, with the design, you know, kill those aliens, or kill, you know, destroy the, what is it, Death Star or something like that. You know what Death Star is? No, you don't know what it is. That's good, you don't know what it is. So, or, you know, use my, what is it, laser sword or something like that. kill people. So, and you see that children, they watch these movies, and they actually absorb the consciousness of the movies of the kids walking around with different like implements of destruction. So association, I would say, is probably 90% as far as cutting out this whole chain like that, a chain of desire, buddha and bijam, which ultimately means stopping your suffering. That's it. And of course, association can also be associated with the mind, with different desires, with different thoughts, with obsessions, obsessive thoughts. You know, we obsess on different thoughts, we contemplate on different thoughts. Even the thought, you know, woe is me, how nobody knows the trouble I've seen, nobody knows the sorrow. And then we become, you know, just really miserable because of that. Anyway, so that's one cause. Another cause of this papam or kutam and bijam is offenses against Vaishnavas. When we offend Vaishnavas, then the sinful desire actually becomes implanted in our heart because we lose a taste for hearing and chanting. And therefore, we suffer. So it all ends up with suffering, in any case. Whether your desires or your visions or seed of desire is due to bad association, or whether it's due to committing offenses, then it just ends up in pain and suffering. So that should be an impetus for us. We want to avoid pain and suffering. And so the way to avoid pain and suffering is to do that. And otherwise, we can keep experiencing these things and keep experiencing pain and suffering. You know, we'll keep having avidya. We'll keep committing papam, sinful activities. Isn't it? We'll keep doing these things. And we'll keep developing these different uncontrollable, unfulfillable desires. So anyway, so here Narada Muni is encouraging King Pachinibharishat to give up his papam. He's not really dealt with the avidya aspect right now or with the bijam, but at least giving up the papam. And later on he'll deal, later on in this particular chapter and the following chapters, he'll deal with avidya. He'll deal with avidya and desires. But that takes some time. So first of all, that's how we preach to people. You want to give up suffering? Here's how you give up suffering. So any questions or comments about these things? Questions, comments, arguments, problems? Jagat?
Desires come
from our initial turning away from Krishna. Then we're put on the roller coaster of the material energy. Avritam Gadamika. No, there's another verse I was looking for. Hika Shichanamati Jatatishtati Karma Krit. Kadiyate Yavasat Karma Sarva Prakriti Jagana. The living entity. The living entity is forced to act helplessly as if born, forced by the modes of material nature. So in other words, we turn our face away from Krishna, then the modes of nature start to act on us. They're a continual struggle for supremacy. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the other two modes. In other words, it's like a continual tug of war between the modes. So we have the original free will that we exercise to turn our face away from Krishna got us in this morass in which, you know, we're pulled from one direction to another. So that's where desires come from. Desires come from the association. Of course, we could choose who to associate with and what to associate with. And that way we have a little bit of freedom in shaping our desires. But it's not that you can just directly go to the desire. It's not to say, you know, I desire, what do I desire? Let me figure out something. A Mercedes. Okay, let's figure something innocent. I desire Mercedes. So how do I do with it, that desire? I said, change it? How can I change it? You know, what? The only way I can change it is by desiring a Rolls Royce. No. A higher taste. That's a higher taste, by desiring to please Krishna. But, you know, I can't really negate that desire. I haven't really chosen to desire a Mercedes. I haven't really chosen it. It's come about through association. Do you all understand that? If you look at your desires, you haven't really chosen the specific desires. You may have chosen the association you've taken that's helped you develop those desires, but you haven't chosen those desires. If I have chosen my desires, I could just very easily unchoose them. And I can't. I can get rid of them by a superior desire, panam drishta nivartate, either by a superior material desire, like I pointed out, what, the Rolls Royce in comparison to a Mercedes, or the Lamborghini. You know, if I think of the Lamborghini, I don't think of the Mercedes anymore. Isn't that true? Or let's say you have what does it do with computers? Let's say you have an HP, you know, some cheap laptop. And then if someone gives you MacBook Air, the latest one or something like that? You don't really use your HP anymore. You know, it's under, except for exceptional reasons. So even in the mature world, the principle of higher taste applies. What to speak of spiritually, when we have a higher spiritual taste, then that is the way for us to deal with desires. But we didn't choose our specific desires. I can't think of an instance where we chose our desires. We chose our association, and the association gave birth to those desires. Like I don't want to drink liquor. But if I went into a bar and associated with drunk people all the time, then eventually the desire to drink would arise in the heart. Isn't it? And that's just the way it is. Everybody understand that point? You're responsible for your desires. It's nothing to say, because I didn't choose them, I'm not responsible. You're responsible because the desires came from some previous cause, which is, you know, avidya, and then kuta, etc., which is ultimately comes from Krishna Bhavi Mukha, ignoring Krishna, or your desires also came from association that you chose. Just like I have one person I know in Europe who can't stay away from liquor, even though his liver is practically gone. And the reason is that his friends, the only friends he has, are where? In the bar. And what can you do? And you take away his friends, you know, he has no life anymore. So he's choosing to associate with these friends. And then the desire to drink or the activity of drinking occurs as a result of that. Does anyone understand that? Yeah, your desires, you didn't directly choose. You chose them indirectly by what association you chose. You try that. Try it sometimes, you know, just watch a specific movie and see what desires arise in your heart. Isn't it? Try it. You know, just take some movie off the shelf or off the internet and watch and see your desires change. You can do an experiment on consciousness. Or if you associate with Krishna Katha, then your desires will manifest in terms of Krishna. It's as simple as that. That's why hearing is very important. The method of hearing, association by hearing, is the most important way to associate. It's like when I hear about Hanuman's intense, last night I was listening about to Hanuman's intense desire to be a pure servant of Sri Ram. Like he asked for the benediction. This is an interesting story. That after Lord Ram won back the kingdom, he and Sita Devi, they were sitting on the throne, and Sita Devi feeling so much so much happiness and so much compassion and so much love for Hanuman gave him jewels from around her neck. And Hanuman said, I'm not interested in these jewels. I'm simply interested, please bless me in eternal devotion to be the Lord's dearmost servant. And she granted that. I'm just hearing about that. The desire in my heart to become the Lord's servant arose. Normally that desire wouldn't arise. But when you hear about these great devotees... Actually, just one other thing I just read, that Srila Prabhupada said, that if you hear about some great devotee's devotion, that's the secret for attaining pure devotional service. So in other words, by that association with the devotion, that devotion becomes implanted in your own heart, and you get that same desire. So we can choose our association by which desires are inculcated.